Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
Any other moon landing geeks in the room?
I didn't hear.
Moon landing geeks?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It surprised me. You know, I didn't think I was one. But then I really got swept up in it this last week. You know, 50 years ago yesterday, they were standing on the moon. He's got, you know, what are the chances? All the things that could have gone wrong. All those technical things that had to go right. Get a little bubble there, put it down, take it back up, go back on.
Right.
My gosh. Yeah. So, of course, it took a lot of energy to do that. You know, a lot of just so many resources that was talked about at the time. Ralph Abernathy was not happy about that. You know, it took this race, this pissing contest with the Russians and all about global power and so forth and so on. But once they get there, you know, there's the beauty of the moon. And then this moment that I heard on a podcast described by Collins. What was Collins' first name?
Michael
Collins, right. Where the craft turns around and he sees the earth, the earth rise. It just so happens, and he's looking for his camera, and he can't find it. It just so happens he brought some color film, which they were saying, you don't need color film. You know, there's a bunch of scientists. You need black and white to document it. But he had this color film and he took that picture that changed things, changed people's consciousness, I think, in some way. I don't know if it changed it enough, but it shifted things, I think, for people. And there is an analogy with practice, I think. All this energy to take us up to some place, to take us away from our home, to some weightless place from which we can look back, from which we can get a truly new perspective. Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about a different perspective today, from a different perspective from that. This poem by Dylan Thomas that I used to have memorized. I like it a lot, and I'll read it to you now. The force that through the green fuse drives the flower, drives my green age, that blasts the roots of trees is my destroyer. And I am dumb to tell the crooked rose my youth is bent by the same wintry fever. The force that drives the water through the rocks drives my red blood, that dries the mouthing streams turns mine to wax. And I am dumb to mouth unto my veins how at the mountain spring the same mouth sucks. The hand that whirls the water in the pool stirs the quicksand, that ropes the blowing wind, hauls my shroud sail, and I am dumb to tell the hanging man how of my clay is made the hangman's lime. The lips of time leech to the fountainhead. Love drips and gathers, but the fallen blood shall calm her sores. And I am dumb to tell the weather's wind how time has ticked a heaven round the stars. And I am dumb to tell the lover's tomb how at my sheet goes the same crooked worm. Well, there's a poem about life and death. And how we share them with everything. How the force that drives the flower's growth drives my child's growth. That depletes a rose, depletes me. That dries up streams, turns me to dust. And the first Zen point that this poem is going to help me make is to please remember that the life force and the death force are part of you and me and everything. Everything is doing that dance of life and death all the time, according to Zen. The han there that we strike begins, life and death are great matters. Remember them. Don't waste this life. Don't forget to study them. Remember. And that's what that's about. It's remembering when we hit it. We need that reminder because we too often, I think, get stuck in the weeds of life. In the hurly-burly. And forget those great forces that are important to study and remember. We get too busy with the push and pull of our lives and the wins and the losses. But I don't think it's just a matter of distraction that keeps us from those. I think it's also, well, it's deeper than that. In his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Denial of Death, Ernest Becker, this is back in the 60s, 70s, outlines the way that he felt we distract ourselves from the idea of death. It's not just a passive sort of thing. There's an active something going on, too, that keeps us from working with that. As far as we know, we're the only species that has this knowledge, that understands fully that we're going to die. And we're saddled with that. You know, we are incredible creatures. Oh, my God! Shoot a little tin can to the moon, get out, come back. And so many other things. We can know so much. We can write, you know, Shakespeare plays, build castles. And on the flip side, we know we're going to die. Ernest Becker says, I like this quote, man, he was writing in the 60s, is literally split in two. He has an awareness of his own splendid uniqueness in that he sticks out of nature with a towering majesty. And yet he goes back into the ground a few feet in order to blindly and dumbly rot and disappear forever. It is a terrifying dilemma to be in and to have to live with. Dylan Thomas says, remember. Remember, we're on par with all these things in nature. And the Zen tradition says, what Dylan Thomas says, we're not that special in that poem, I think. And the Zen tradition says, reminds us to look carefully at the activities of life and death, to try to look at them with, I think, with a certain perspective that I would call dispassionate. Because life and death, as the poem intimates at least, are not only natural, but from the right point of view, they're neutral. And feeling that, really feeling that, has been helpful to me in my life. Really feeling that okay with life and death. Zazen gives us this dispassionate place to view all of life and death from. And Zazen itself, the activity of Zazen, is a kind of death. To really do it, I think we have to give up our striving, winning and losing selves. To really do Zazen, we have to practice doing the death activity. And I believe that one of the reasons it's difficult to stop thinking is because on some level we equate that with dying, with stopping altogether. So if we do it every day, as I suggest you do, we die every day. We get in the habit of doing that death activity every day. I think most of us have a deep bias that equates life with good and death with bad. And when we do this in obvious and also in subtle ways, we just can't see them properly. We can't see them as simply as natural forces. I think of our old friend Ikkyu, Zen master from 14th century. He did not see death as something to be feared or hated. He was very interested in death. It was something to be brought to life. So that story I told on at New Year's about he would, New Year's Day, knock on people's door with a skull and a pike. And when they opened the door, he'd push this skull up into their face and say, "Happy New Year!" Here's a poem from him. "I woke from a dream of death. Today's amazing. Death grass, death rice, death chairs, death, death, asleep or awake. Today's amazing." So the first Zen point that this poem is helping me make is remember life and death are part of us. They're part of everything. Remember, remember. Probably. Anybody else grow up in England? Oh, yeah. That's right. Mike, you did. Do you remember that? Oh, Saul, remember, remember the 5th of November. November. Right, that's for...
Gunpowder, treason, and plot.
Yeah, good. that's for Guy Fawkes Day. So, being a poet myself, I made this one up. Remember, remember, there's a June and December. Isn't that good? Yeah. So life and death. Just a few minutes ago I made that up. So the second point that this poem helps me make is this, that not only is our life and death connected to a dance that everything is doing, but also that life and death are connected with each other. That is a subtle difference, but it's a difference. That you cannot have one without another. And in Dylan Thomas, in this poem, you know, that's hinted at because, of course, the two are side by side throughout the whole poem. In the verse of the Han, they're twinned, life and death, in the classic koan collection, the Mumin Khan, I looked up the word death, and it appears 7 times, and it does not appear without either the word life or birth. Mm-hmm. Birth and death, life and death. Zen wants us to know that these two are together. They are connected. Ikkyu has this, another poem. You poor sad thing, thinking death is real all by itself. Mm-hmm. Zen is a form of Buddhism, of course, that has been influenced by Taoism. And when considering the opposites of life and death, I think you can really feel that. You can see that yin-yang symbol with that has the opposites together interpenetrating each other. The circle of yin and yang, you know, that represents the world. Life and death share the world as equals, even though we don't always see that or feel it. They're partners, they're living in the same domain, under the same roof. How are they going to get along? Are they going to fight? Is this going to be a noisy household full of conflict? Zen models another way. They can be friends. They can respect each other. They can even help each other. And this is how I was taught. In a calm and generous system, opposites help each other. They don't fight. In particular, the opposites of the life force and the death force. The life activity, the expansive activity, goes forth and out in some way. Starting a project, growing an idea. These have their day and their place, and in a healthy system, they're followed by the death activity. The contractive activity. When the day is done, we sleep. When the life activity is done, it's thing, it's time for death, for rest, for fallow, for contracting. And the life activity then follows that. The death activity follows the life activity follows the death activity. And I find this true of feelings of up and down, of happiness and sadness, of winning and losing, of starting and stopping. What is our relationship to these activities, to these opposites? Do we love one and hate the other? Or are these activities friends with each other? Do they appreciate each other? When we do Zazen, we willingly enter into one of those activities, the death activity, as I see it. And when we do it fully, we find no self. Maybe I should put it this way. When we do it as fully as we can, we find we get some taste of no self. And then we come back to life, to self. And if we keep at this practice, that rhythm, the way I feel is that self and no self, these aspects of ourselves, can become friends with each other. They can have friendly relations, living under the same roof. And they don't mind, they trust each other. They don't mind passing the lead over from one to the other. They don't have to hold on jealously. They know and trust each other. Zen is for the living. It's not for the dead. My vision anyway is not that you will go and live on the moon. You're to go to the moon and come back. And that journey helps us. Helps us live more fully. To help generate well-being for ourselves and for our loved ones and family and community and this world of ours. But I think it does it, it allows us to do it in a more properly grounded manner, in a more inclusive manner. Dylan Thomas reminds us that life and death are natural. We share these forces with everything in the world. And I think Thomas and Becker and Ikkyu would all agree, remember to look at life and death and to do your best to realize them fully in your life. Remember they're natural, that we share them with everything, and that they are together, that they're yoked together. And I think that they can learn to be friends.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.